podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
And it's the weekend, and it's John Gibbons hosting this week. Hello, I'm joined by Cathy Long, by Damian Cavana, and by Robbie O'Neill to talk about Liverpool Football Club and what they may or may not do this week. That's both in the transfer markets and also on the pitch, because at the time of recording, Liverpool's game away at Aston Villa in the FA Cup is very much in the balance. But we're going to have a bigger picture chat first of all, and just have a little think about where we're at the moment, where we feel the team are at. Is it more or less what we expected? Is it slightly better? Is it slightly worse? And also sort of what you think you want from Liverpool on and off the pitch in January or over the next couple of weeks. And that can include how your attitudes to the FA Cup generally, I suppose. So we'll start with you, Robbie. What have you made of us sort of recently, season so far stuff, and where we are in terms of where your expectations and hopes were?
In terms of my expectations, they have fluctuated wildly since the season started. I came into the season, and after signing Thiago and Jota, I thought we'd be clear front runners. And, you know, at various stages of the season, that has been the case. However, I think one game and one instance has informed where I'm at now more than any, and that was the derby. I think the fallout from the derby, when I watched that game, at the end of it, I was like, "Fuck!" When it became obvious what had happened to Virgil, and then the Joe Gomez injury, which happened, I think it was a week after, 2 weeks after, wasn't it? They were quite close to one another. I was like, "How are we going to cope?" And it's not necessarily that I didn't think the players we've got at the back weren't good enough for us to cope. It's just because of the intensity of the fixture schedule. You know, it's unforgiving at the moment, and obviously, where we're at now, we can see that we're missing players in the middle of the park, i.e. Fabinho. He's having to fill in centre-back, Matip's injured. And after that derby, I kind of thought we'd struggle. We then exceeded all my expectations. And, you know, we just, if there was any kind of hardship, we seemed to overcome it. And then, you know, the last week, it's been really difficult. It's been really difficult. And I'm one of those fortunate people that have come off social media in the last 6 months. So I don't really see like the Twitter hysteria. And as disappointing as the last week was, when I think back to that derby, and when I think to how I felt when Van Dijk and Lattery Gomez were injured, I think we're in a good spot, actually. Whether we'll win it, I don't know. I think it's going to be tight, and I think we might struggle if we don't sign a centre-half. But I think when you take everything that's happened into consideration and you look at the luck that we've had, I think we're in better nick than a lot of people are giving us credit for. Things aren't without difficulty. There's no two ways about it. But I think I'm happy with where we're at the moment, and just got to hope that in the next couple of weeks something happens at the back and we can push on from there.
In terms of the last couple of weeks then, Robbie, just to sort of stick with you a minute before we move on to Cathy, kind of, you know, the results haven't been great the last few games. Do you put that down to sort of a bad run? Do you put that down to kind of, you know, everyone will have a blip this season and that was ours? Or do you think there's things starting to creep in that might suggest, you know, things are catching up with them a little bit, or what do you sort of put it down to?
I think it's a mix of all those things. The West Brom thing, one thing that stood out for me, it was naivety. I mean, I can't think of a time in the last 2 or 3 years when I've considered this Liverpool team naive. And, you know, when we're chasing, you know, we're pushing for a goal at the end, and they took, I know it's come back to the fore because of what happened the other night at the end, the short corner against West Brom. I was absolutely aghast. I know Jamie Carragher was on commentary, but I was like, what are they doing? And then, so I was like, it was just such a naive thing for them to do. And then obviously it happened the other night again. And so I think maybe there are elements creeping in which they need to iron out. I do think that it is a blip. The bottom line is, you know, you can't go 2, 3, 4 years and just like lose one or two games a season. I suppose you could, but you know, you'd be pushing your luck, wouldn't you? And I think they have overperformed at times, and there have been times over the last 2 years, it's not like we've battered everyone 6-0 every game. There have been games where we've really had to grind it out, and a lot of key decisions haven't gone our way this season. Let's get that right. Like, going back to that derby again, sound like an Evertonian here, but if you go back to that derby again, you've got, you know, the winner at the end, which was chalked off, and other things, and then we've had other goals which VAR has chalked off for, you know, spurious reasons at best. So I think it's just a perfect storm of things, and with that in mind, I do think at some point things are probably going to start going our way again, because we have had rotten luck. We've had rotten luck, and at some point, if you keep working hard and you stay true to the cause, that luck will change. But I think it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard if that's okay.
Okay, Cathy, I'll just ask you the first open question as well. Then, where do you think we're at with this season, and where are you at with where we're at?
Oh, where am I at? I mean, it's the weirdest season going, isn't it? For like so many reasons. First of all, I think where we're at is, I think we're spoiled. I think in the last couple of years we have been spoiled, and it's brilliant that we've got such high expectations. You know, it's fantastic to be in that situation, really, where we're complaining if we don't win every game. But I think this is a really hard season to judge. I just think, you know, without crowds, I think it's been really, really difficult for everybody. I think nothing feels like it's normal anymore. I think, you know, last season, I've said this before, but once we didn't have crowds, for me, it was just about getting over the line. You know, it was just, we've just got to win this thing. We've got a few games. We've just got to make sure we wrap this league up. But I think it's very, very different for every single player this year. And some of the players do look like they're playing with long COVID. Whether they are or not is hard to know, you know. But, I mean, I agree with Robbie about the naivety. That's what seems strange. And it feels like we're just sort of getting caught out, you know, by having a slow start in games. And to have a slow start and a sort of slow finish, you know, when you really need to score, is very strange. It sort of feels a little bit like we're being so patient with the ball. And I like, you know, it's easy to feel okay about being patient with the ball when you're winning, when it works, when you just keep passing it around and something eventually falls for you, you know, and you think, just keep going. It usually falls for us. Something will happen. You know, we'll get that goal and then, you know, then we'll be all over these. But we're having games where that's not happening. And we just seem to be running out of ideas and just carrying on passing the ball backwards. I find it really strange when I see Robbo and Trent constantly sort of come, you know, getting to the edge of the box and then always pulling the ball back. And I'm thinking, you know, bomb on, and you've got Mane there. Like, it seems as though they're being much more conservative. And I think partly maybe it's because we really miss Hendo and Fabinho even when they're playing, because we miss having them in midfield. And I think that's been a real loss for us. You know, people have said, oh, well, the defence is okay. You know, we haven't been conceding too many goals with those in the team, but we're not playing as we used to, because the way our team plays, it's like everyone's attacking, everyone's defending. So we miss Van Dijk, yeah. You know, but not just for his defensive headers, you know, but he's the first one passing the ball out and he's creating things, and the whole way the team plays. It seems like it's really finally balanced, this team, and the minute we have to change it and we lose that pattern, then it's not working. And we have been unlucky, haven't we, with injuries, you know, but...
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, the idea of, you know, they have looked like such a machine, and they've looked like, you know, a team that's greater than the sum of the parts. And let's face it, the parts are pretty fantastic. If you could be greater than the sum of them, then you're really sort of cooking. And do you think maybe a little bit of confidence has gone out of them as well? You know, you were talking there about about the fullbacks, you know, going then sort of going back. I think there's a bit of that, Cathy.
Yeah, it feels like that. It feels like it's, and I think maybe what surprised us all is we felt so confident because we felt like they were confident and they acted it, and it was like just this machine. And I think what sort of feels like it's shocked us is that suddenly, see, that confidence suddenly seems fragile. And whether that's us projecting, because our confidence suddenly feels fragile when we're thinking, you know, actually we're not so confident that we're going to score and we're going to, you know, win every game. I think it has. I think it's been really different for them when they've, you know, we had a good start, didn't we? And Jota was playing well. I mean, it just seemed amazing having him and Thiago coming into the team. And then it did only seem to take, you know, one game in the derby to get those really bad injuries. And it felt like maybe we just sort of, we could survive with one or two things changing. You know, Klopp's been able to make one or two changes in each game and it's been all right. But suddenly we've made so many changes that the team doesn't look like a team anymore. We seem devoid of ideas, you know, and we look on the bench and we think, well, who have we got that's really going to unlock this? That they're all a risk, you know. Is Shaqiri going to do something? He might, you know, but you're not thinking like, you know, get Coutinho on or something, you know.
I mean, he might be an option,
even he's injured now. You think even the ones that we've talked about before, like, are injured, you know. I don't think anyone's going to want to come near us, you know, for the thoughts of getting injured, really. So, yeah, it does seem it's strange, isn't it, that it feels as though perhaps they're not so confident, but I think they're not so confident going forward, you know. It's a weird mix of confidence, but then it seems like almost complacency sometimes when they're just thinking, we'll just keep moving the ball and it'll be fine. And teams are happy to let us have the ball. You know, West Brom were, weren't they, you know?
Yeah.
Southampton were for large parts of the game, you know. Then they get confident because they just think, well, you know, that's all right. They've had the ball for the last hour. They're not going anywhere. They're not doing anything with it.
Yeah, I thought that this early was a little bit
we
of
could
that.
Do with it. We could do with a game against someone's under eights, you know, and that might be what we end up with tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, yeah, more on that soon. Okay, David, we'll come to you. Where are you at with what you've seen so far and what you've seen recently and what you expect to see over the next month?
I think what Robbie and Cathy have both said has been very measured about this. I think the only reason that there's a title race on at all is because of our injuries. But equally, you can't just cry about that because all teams have them. It's just those crucial injuries in those crucial positions and a number of them, which is absolutely hampering us. And I think that's got a lot to do with what's going on at the moment now. The attrition thing, the games, players going stale, needing replacing them, whatever have you, all contributes bad luck, things evening out, it's all that. But yeah, at the start of the season, I thought we were going to absolutely batter this league. And I think going back, and it was a great point there made from the derby and then the Gomez injury thereafter, everything has stemmed from that because, you know, the fullbacks are going to miss the first choice centre-halves. The goalie's going to miss having them. Then the midfield's going to miss having them. Not only are the midfield going to miss having them, we've got midfielders playing in defence. So, and then how does that support the attack? So you can't, you know, it's not a question of saying, oh, Salah missed that shot because Virgil's not playing. It's because Liverpool are such a team and the emphasis has been on such being a team that they can accommodate an injury here and there, accommodate a loss of form here and there. But when they're literally saying, well, OK, we're going to remove two key components, then it makes it very difficult. And so on one hand, I'm very pleased with where we are. And then on the other hand, over the last few weeks, you think, you know, if we'd have played anywhere near as good as we could do, we could have a further what? 6-7 points easily. And so that makes it frustrating. And it's about taking the broad picture. But going back to, you know, where I feel we're up to, I think we've performed manfully under the circumstances. I don't think any other of our rivals could have been given the same type of injuries and schedule and been in our position. But we're very, we feel very mortal now. And it feels like Man City could go back right past us if they get on a run of form and we better catch it quick. I don't think we can genuinely compete for the two big prizes that we want without either Virgil coming back by some miraculous thing that, you know, and it's been a secret that's being kept, or Liverpool signing somebody else. I really think it's down to that, quite frankly. And I just think that it's been one of those seasons where everything's kind of that could have gone wrong for us has. And so you've got to give them 10 out of 10 for effort. And there's been times when you've seen the team flicker, haven't you? There's been a few performances and you just, do you know what? When they've got control of the ball, when they've got the game, and when they can keep the opposition away from the centre-backs, we can destroy anybody. And so that gives you an imbalanced hope about we're just going to... I tell you what, we're going to go and win the league without the two best centre-backs that we could possibly turn out. But it's such a difficult competition. And it's just the way of the world. And you know, I'm always trying to be philosophical about this. You know, 2 or 3 years ago, we'd have killed for this position to have the titles that we've got and to be here. But equally, that's not good enough. I'm not settling on that. I don't mean that. I'm not settling to say, well, okay, that's it. We've done it now. Let's have another 10 years off. I want Liverpool to go again. So I don't want them to do the wrong thing with regard to what their long-term planning is, because long-term planning at Liverpool's been fantastic. But we're genuinely in a position where we're competing for second if we don't watch it. So I've got conflicting emotions with it all. And it's not usual that I'm like that. I'm either usually saying, you know, this fundamental stuff needs doing or everything's rosy, but it just feels like we're in a state of flux at the moment, doesn't it? And there have been occasions where the team attitude hasn't been as good as it might have been. I think there's been a couple of performances where we've started at half time. That's not good enough. And I was glad that Jürgen called them out after the Southampton game, because I did think it was a question of application. But, you know, it's a tough league, and We have got cause for optimism in the fact that if we got... Yeah, Jota's a good example about... He was signed because the three that we've got up front are boss. And the three that we've got up front, the only thing that could be against them is freshness. So we get him in and he looks fantastic and he brings a new dimension to the team, because then you can rotate up front and keep the quality. But now he's not available. We're just back to flying on one engine again, and it just feels like a bit flat at the moment. And the best thing about Jürgen is he's such a positive guy, and I don't think there's too much that other than if he plays Thiago back into fitness and being ready to go, and if he gets Jota back, and if Trent gets his form back, then we're a genuine concern for everybody else. So I know I'm answering it left and right here and up and down a bit, but I think that's the nature of the season and the nature of the performances that we've been watching this season.
Yeah, no, I think that's all fair. So do you think I'll go to you, Robbie. Do you think the hunger's still there amongst them? You know, Damien talked there a little bit about attitude, and a couple of times it's been off. You know, I'm not, you know, if you asked them if they want to win stuff, of course they said yeah, but do you think there's an element of, with everything that's gone on, and, you know, with the idea of not necessarily they've won it now, but they won it behind closed doors, and the fact that there's still, you know, not really fans there, we've had dribs and drabs and back away again. Do you think they're struggling a little bit for motivation, maybe, perhaps, at the moment?
I think it's, there's going to be elements of that, but I do think the hunger is there, because they're getting angry.
Yeah.
I mean, the last couple of they're getting frustrated, and they wouldn't get frustrated if they didn't want it, and I think they want it. And I think Neil made a good point on a show the other day about the Matip injury against West Brom. He said that was kind of like a seismic event, because it was like after that everybody started to it's like their heads went down and everyone panicked a bit. And I think they know what they're in now. I think they were just kind of dealing with things as they were occurring, but I think at this moment in time, the players are kind of like angry about where they are, and that anger comes from care. And on that note, it's hard, because like this is the time as a supporter that you want to get in the ground, and you want to get behind them. You know what I mean? You want to get there, and we can't do that. And that must be so hard as a professional footballer at the moment, particularly if you're going through a bit of a tough spot, not to have anyone in the stands. So I think they're lacking, I don't know, I don't think it's an internal motivation that they're lacking. I think all the trimmings that come with being a champion, if you like, are missing. And I think that if they can get over that, I think they'll be fine. I really do.
Think they'll sign anyone, Cathy?
Nah, I don't think we will. I mean, you never know. They've, you know, they could be just playing hard to get, really. It's possible. But generally, I think they mean what they say. You know, and it's weird, isn't it? Because, I mean, doesn't seem that long ago that everybody wanted the youngsters to come through. You know, people were saying, you know, we need more local youngsters in the team. Like, you know, we want them to come through. And now there seems to be almost an assumption that they won't be good enough, and we must go out and buy someone else. Well, you know, if Van Dijk's got a twin somewhere, then that would be fantastic. But I would rather that we, you know, it's cliche, but I'd rather we bought the right player than, you know, the quick player. It's like the right pass, isn't it? You know, you just got to pay the right pass, not necessarily the Hollywood one all the time. So, you know, yeah, maybe we're going to have to be patient, which is going to be tough. Pretty tough, because I think we are used to thinking Klopp's going to just pull something out of the bag, you know. Maybe he will, because I think we are going to struggle. You know, if Reece gets injured as well, like, the way things are going, does feel as though we feels like anyone could get injured at any moment, you know. We'll wrap them all up with cotton wool, don't we, you know?
It is funny, because I saw someone else, I think it was James Pearce, put a thing before, they said, if they get one more injury, it might change. And I was like,
how many injuries do we need to get? Yeah.
I'm not sure there's another centre-half to get injured.
No, exactly. When we were watching the stuff at the White House last night, my mate of mine texted me, he said, that's Liverpool fans out there, there's a rumour there's a centre-back inside the building. They're all trying to get in there, you know.
Do you know what, though, David? I've been watching these videos of Virgil and all that. He looks fine to me. I reckon he'd be ready to go for United.
That's what's killing us, isn't it? You know, right, that's, I even alluded to it before, didn't I? I even said, you know, me, you know, if the, you know, the medical people say, well, listen, we can get him back at the end of February, then Liverpool would be correct not signing no one, and it'd say, right, let's go with what we've got. He's going to be ready for, you know, a good stretch of a running. Everyone would take that now, wouldn't he? Everyone would take that as the best delay Crimbo present we've ever had as Liverpoolians. We're so desperate to see somebody who could give us an assurance in that regard. And so, I don't know whether we're going to get anybody. I wouldn't go anywhere near playing poker with Jürgen. He'd just have me right off. He'd be laughing at me. I wouldn't be able to read him. You know, the club's been so brilliant, haven't they, with the transfer strategies and all that caper. I don't think we can not sign another centre-half and win the league this season. That's really tough to take. On the other side of things, if the club's got a strategy going forward with the finances, and don't forget there's no gate receipts and there hasn't been for some time, sponsorships might be less lucrative than they have been. If the club are going to look at this on a long term one and say, tell you what though, our long term strategy means we're going to be in the top two for the next five seasons and we're going to win the league at least twice, and we're not going to throw that away by starting to throw good money after bad because we're having a short term crisis, we'll finish in the Champions League next year and we've already got a centre half lined up for next year in the summer, then I could fully understand that strategy. Obviously, they can't reveal that hand to us, and so we've just got to go along with blind faith. But given of what we've seen in the past, and in particular, Virgil being the greatest example of waiting for your right man at the right time and then reaping the rewards after it, you know, I can see both sides of this. As a Liverpool fan, there must be a deal out there where Liverpool could take a little bit of a short-term knock on the finances and stabilise that defence and give us a fighting chance for the big trophies that we want. But if that's not out there and our rivals know we're in a bad position and they want to add another 10 million and the club just say, listen, this just doesn't add up. You know, the new season starts next August and believe me, we'll be flying by then. It's one of those, it's going to be tough to take, you know, and like we were saying before, we've been very spoiled recently, so I'm going to be philosophical about that.
I think people think it's like easier to sign players than it is, because whenever I talk to anyone in the business, they always say, like, you've no idea how hard it is to get the right player at the right price. Like, it can take a long time. You can end up paying a fortune for someone if you're not careful. And who's going to come in when they know, really, that it's probably short term, you know? I was thinking recently, you know, a lot about Houllier, and I interviewed him a couple of times. And I remember talking to him about transfers, and he was talking about someone that he'd wanted to sign for us. And this player was great. He was coming from France, as a lot of his signings did. And he kept asking how many trees there were in Liverpool. And Houllier said, I was literally looking up like data on the number of trees. And then he started quoting things about the amount of parks and green spaces and all the rest of it, you know. And he said, I had so many conversations with this guy about trees because his wife wanted to know how many trees there were, that he was like, I'm not signing players who want trees.
I want players who pull them up. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, like, you know, in the end, he was like, "This is a mad conversation," you know. And I've heard so many tales like that where you think, "Why can't we just go and get so and so?" Well, because his wife refuses to not live by her mother or something. You know what I mean? It's like, there's all sorts of issues that could come up.
It's also the one position where it's probably more difficult to find true quality than any other. You know what I mean? It's not like we're going out there and saying we just need another midfielder. We need a pretty good centre half, and they're not sent a penny. And that's the other problem that they've got. And I know this has been mentioned a lot of times before, but I think the something about this is they've got a number one target and they're going to go for him in the summer. In fact, I've got a feeling that number one target will be lining up against us in February, and if we weren't playing Leipzig, then maybe that would have been the case. But it's just how do they deal, how do they pivot, and it's going to be interesting to see. But I'm personally not convinced they're going to sign anyone. I hope they do, though. I really do.
That'd be great, wouldn't it?
Give us all a boost. We'll leave it there for part one. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back in our little sort of virtual studio towards the end to preview a game that might not happen. Tell you what, it's going to be some challenge, but I'm sure with the esteemed company I've got with me, we'll manage it. In between all that, we've got a few inserts. We've got a couple of minutes of subscriber show that we've done this week that we wanted to play out for you ahead of the FA Cup games this weekend. Also, myself spoke to Johnny Bongo. Dave's been on a few times about a big event called Bongo's Got Talent that's happening this weekend, virtually. Obviously, nothing's happening really, but it sounds fantastic and something to look forward to. And Andy's spoken to Billy Moore and his brother Joe about a big Alder Hay fundraiser that they're doing as well. So all that to come. Don't go anywhere. Don't switch over to anything else. Thanks very much. Speak to you all soon. It's FA Cup weekend, of course, and one of the big games in the FA Cup this season is Marine v Spurs. What a tie. What an exciting one for all those Marine fans. Unfortunately, won't be able to get into the ground and see it, but I'm sure they'll be glued to the TV like the rest of us, hoping and praying and maybe just dreaming the Marine can do a bit of an upset. Who knows? The FA Cup this season, as of a few seasons now, is sponsored by Budweiser, and Budweiser have asked us to do a post-match pint like we do after the Liverpool games, but straight after the Marine v Spurs one. So we're looking forward to that. Robbo will be hosting as ever, joined by a couple of Marine fans that we know, to look back on who knows what could be an amazing giant killing. But we're really looking forward to it. There won't be any Marine fans in the ground, of course, but one man who will be there, of course, is the manager, Neil Young. And he did a big show with us this week with Mike Kearney in the dugout, which looks at the coaching eye. We've been doing it for a while now on our subscription service, and it's an excellent show, and Mike does a really good job hosting it. Neil Young was the guest this week, Marine manager, of course. And here's a little snippet of that to get you in the mood for the FA Cup this week. Weekend.
A lot of people who are not really into the non-league scene will now know you from the stuff that has gone on with Marine FA Cup this season. Brilliant, but it's fair to say that you're not. It's not. This is no fluke. From what I would say, you know, you've had success in the past, haven't you? Non-league wise with Chester, you know,
yeah,
lots of success there. And how I know it's a different game because it's a Premier League opposition, but how much are you thinking? Well, it's at the end of the day, it is just a game of football, and you know, you've got to prepare for it in so much detail, but how much will you be saying to your lads that you're going to pick on the 11? Look, this is just a game. You know, you've got just as much chance as what you would anywhere else. You've played against better players before, obviously, because you played league opposition to be where you are, and haven't Waterloo last round where two leagues above you, I think, weren't they? So,
yeah.
You know, how much are you emphasising to your players at the minute that as much as this is a massive opportunity and lots will be televised and stuff like that, just to try and take the pressure off them and say it's just a game of football?
Well, I think it's 11 v 11 at the end of the day when we kick off the game. Obviously, they're going to be technically and tactically better than us. They're going to be fitter than us, you would think, being obviously a full-time Premier League club. A lot will depend on what team, you know, they send. But what we'll be organised. We won't be lacking in effort. We won't be lacking in will to go and win. And we've got to make it as difficult as we can for Tottenham Hotspur. You know, they've got to come to our place. I think if it was at their place, it'd be a bit of a different story because the wide open pitch and how lush it would be in terms of them getting it down and passing it. But they've got to come to our place, and we'll pay them every respect, like rightly so, for what a fantastic football club they are. But as you say, it's 11 v 11. You know, we've got to make it as difficult as we possibly can for them. It's not true that we'll be training on the pitch the morning before and putting hoses on it. That's not happening. But what we will be doing, as I say, we'll be making it as difficult as possible, and, you know, looking forward to it.
What would you say the main factor of your, not just your success with Marine, but all over the place was? If you've got to pick, say, two or three things, what would you say? Is it a good dressing room, good, you know, team harmony, or is it mainly just good players make the other two work a lot better?
I think from a personal point of view, it starts with you as the manager. You've got to be diligent. You've got to be willing to put the hard graft in. You've got to be willing to work. You've got to be willing to travel to watch players. And recruitment for me is everything. You know, if you get that wrong, particularly in the summer, or you go into a club that's got it wrong, it becomes very difficult. So recruitment for me is the... And if you get your recruitment right and you've done that correctly, all them things that you've just spoke about in terms of the dressing room and the people that you're bringing into that and the culture that you can then bring to the fore, all coming from that recruitment and what you do in terms of looking at players. But good dressing room's good lads are good, hard working lads and everything, and that's what you try and bring to the table, whatever group of players that you bring together.
Hope you enjoyed that. A nice one for Neil for coming down. He is obviously very busy at the moment, not just with all his media requests, but getting the team ready for the game against Spurs. Everyone in Merseyside's buzzing for it. Everyone in Merseyside is buzzing for Marine, and we're looking forward to covering it Budweiser have asked us to do a post-match pint straight after the Marine v Spurs game. We're made up to be doing it. Budweiser, obviously, the sponsors of the FA Cup. And so Rob will be hosting. It'll be on our normal channel, so it'll be on our YouTube and our app as well. So download the app to get that. And yeah, really looking forward to it. But best of luck to all of us from the Anfield Wrap to Marine this weekend. Hope you can do it. You never know. Okay, it's John Gibbons for the weekend. I'm joined over Zoom by Johnny Bongo. And Johnny, it's another lockdown, but you've always got something crazy up your sleeve. So what are you throwing throwing at the people today?
This is mad. The last time I spoke to you was when we were doing the streams in March.
Yeah.
Last year. And that's just absolutely flown by, nearly a year. What are we doing? We're back doing some streams. The last ones went really well, and it was just something, you know, for us to do that, you know, hopefully, you know, can take people's minds off what's going on for a couple of hours and just have a bit of a laugh. So literally, you know, I didn't think we were going to go into lockdown, and it was as soon as Boris was making an announcement, my phone was getting loads of messages. Does this mean there's going to be streams? Does this mean there's going to be streams? So we're like, okay, sound. So at the moment, we can't actually do bingo just due to sort of some gambling licenses and stuff that we're working on trying to get. But we've done quizzes before, so we thought we'd try and do something a little bit different and host sort of like an online talent competition called Bongo's Got Talent. So basically what we're going to do is we're asking people over the next couple of days, especially if people have got some time on their hands, to send in some videos of any talents they've got. It can literally be anything, gymnastics, singing, dancing, comedy, keepy-ups, like whatever, and send them in. And then we're going to play them out on Saturday night, you know, have a little party and pick a winner and give away a prize.
So obviously these entries have been coming in already. If people want to still enter, they still can, up to 11 a.m. on Saturday morning. I'll read out the email address at the end, but presumably they've been coming in thick and fast. Have you risked delving in to see what's in there?
Well, what I wanted to do was give them to the technical team so that when we play them out, they're kind of fresh. I haven't seen them before, so I've had like a sort of little sneak peek at a few of them, and some good singers, some good dancers, a little bit of magic as well. So, yeah, it should be just good fun. We're still going to do all the stuff that we were doing on the streams, a few quizzes, some dunk music, and just a bit of nonsense. But really, that's the whole idea behind it. You know, it's completely free. Sometimes people get sick of watching box sets and TV, so to watch something that's live and a bit sort of rough around the edges, and especially something that people can get involved in as well. So chance to win £500, a unicorn Henry Hoover Disney princess set, and some tickets to our summer shows as well. So what a prize package that is.
Honestly, I think you must be the single biggest buyer of the Disney princess sets in the West, which is a strange claim to fame, but you know,
honestly, like, I reckon we're the only we've got the only warehouse in the world that is just filled with like 10 items exactly the same. Hoovers, unicorns. You know, it's nuts. Like, it's just mad when you go into our warehouse, just stacked up. Where are the Hoovers? They're just over there by the Apple Sours selection.
Obviously, you enjoyed this stuff, Johnny, and, you know, you're doing it to, you know, to keep sort of busy and stuff yourself, but you must sort of feel a little bit of a... responsibility is probably a strong word, but as you say, as soon as it happens, you know, people are messaging saying, is it going to happen? And I got the sense last time, and we joined in, and me and my missus had a bit of a go and stuff like that. And it's something for people to look forward to, isn't it, when there's not a lot else?
Yeah, it's sort of what Bongo's Bingo is all about in general. You know, before the pandemic, our events are something where people can come. It's escapism at its best, and you just let loose for a bit. And that's like the whole idea behind it. So with this, when the streaming came along, again, it's the same. Just try and forget what's going on. Have a bit of a laugh. Have a drink if you want, and just a bit of silliness. So, yeah, if we can, you know, if we can just put a smile on a few people's faces, then that's job done for us. And because ultimately, we're getting to do something as well. So it works both ways. We're chomping at the bit to perform and you know, and do some kind of stuff. So it's obviously weird performing. You know, none of us are used to really performing in front of cameras and doing stuff like that. We're used to the live audience. So, but it's good. And, you know, it also is able for us to sort of branch out to sometimes for people that might not get to come to a show, or they might not, you know, be, might not be something that they're into. So we're able to, you know, be able to beam into people's living rooms and stuff, which we've not been able to do before.
Yeah, so if you do want to enter, all you got to do is record yourself a little bit of video in landscape, if you don't mind. Just introduce yourself at the start, so your name, a little bit about yourself, what your talent is, and then take it away. Get stuck in, whatever it is. And as Johnny says, it could be anything at all.
Singing, what are you going to send in, John? What are you going to do yourself? Not the truffle shuffle again. Not like that when you come down to the bingos live and the top comes off.
Listen, mate, you said it, escapism, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? I just, when I hear Bewitched, when I hear those opening lines of C'est La Vie, I just lose my shit.
You're gone. That's fine.
Anyway, once you have done your truffle shuffle or equivalents, it's bongosgottalent@bongosbingo.co.uk. So that's bongosgottalent@bongosbingo.co.uk. As I say, by 11 a.m. on Saturday. Or if you've got no talent or you're a bit shy, but you just want to watch the madness unfold, you can get involved. It's 8 o'clock on Saturday night. It's twitch.com/bongosbingo. And I assume if it goes well, mates, you're gonna carry on. You got a few different
things. We're gonna definitely try to do them weekly. We had the benefit last time of all living together where we were able to just do them all the time. But I think if we can try and do one at least on a Saturday night for the next, you know, block for the foreseeable, as long as the lockdown lasts, we're gonna try our best to at least do one a week.
Yeah, and just keep yourself, as I say, ticking over until it's all the other side and you can get back to doing what you're best, which is getting smashed on Bookfest in Ibiza.
Exactly. So,
but it's all that still to come, isn't it, mate? There's that to look forward to. There's all the live stuff.
I really hope so. You know, I think the way things are going now, you know, it's sort of been said many a times, there's light at the end of the tunnel. But now, you know, with the vaccine and stuff, you really kind of start to think, okay, we should be on the home stretch here. But I've learned to just go with the flow. There's no point in just getting too hyped up about anything. Just go with it, see what happens. But yeah, Ultimately, have a bit of crack, as we say.
Well, we'll do that. I'll do that on Saturday night. Listen, Johnny, nice one for coming on.
Nice, bro. Nice to see you. Up the toffees, as always.
This is On the Heat for the Weekend. I'm delighted to be joined by, for this segment of the show, by brothers Billy and Joe Moore. For those that don't know, they've got a rather infamous Twitter account now, which is mainly featuring videos of the 2 years engaging in various activities, maybe we say, including one from Formby this morning. And the reason behind these videos, a lot of it, is to raise awareness around autism, and Joe has autism. And I first come across the periods a few months ago with videos that have gone viral and stuff like that. And, you know, just how much it's inspired me to get off my arse and do a little bit more, you know, just watching the periods and that. So rather than me with it on, if I could open it up to the periods, just how it all started and how it came about.
It all started a couple of years ago when I sat down at my mum's and I realised that I wasn't giving my brother any time. You know, like, you pick up the phone and you find other people's lives more interesting on social media. And I thought, you know what? My brother was trying to talk to me and I was going, you're okay, I'll speak to you in a minute, in a bit, see you tomorrow, next week. And I found myself just in that way of that cycle of just, like, not being attached to anyone apart from my phone or social media. And it was only one time we got up, we walked out the room, and I thought, I just had a little moment of clarity, and I thought, you know what, the people that care about you the most are the ones that are in the same room as you. And it just hit me like that, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to spend a little bit more time, put the phone down, and then started taking to it like an autism all-inclusive hub, do a little bit of boxing. We got involved in that, and then I realised that we just got on well and we had a laugh, and he started telling me about how he wanted to raise money, and he's done skipathons, he's done 1,000 laps in the garden, raising money for the NHS during the first lockdown. So he had this way about, like, wanting to do things, and people sort of warmed to him because he's just innocent, and he's got a great aura about him. It's just, you know, he puts a smile on anyone's face. He'll tell you that, won't you, Joe? Go on, you tell him.
Yeah. A good smile on my face.
He certainly does for me, Joe. I'll tell you that for not. And I think I said before, like, just watching it, you just realise, like, as you said there, you can just kind of get sucked into this.
Yeah.
This routine of doing nothing. And I just find it unbelievable. I mean, you detail that. And but what one of the things that brought yourselves, especially to my attention, was, you know, the work that you've done together. And it's fair to say Joe's not had the best experience with bullying and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I just find it great how you've both challenged that, you know, head on. And, you know, it's easy to dress things up and go, oh, was it crazy? But it mustn't be easy. It must be difficult for you to take that on.
Well, it was difficult because, you know, I sometimes couldn't pick Joe up and take him to where he needed to go. So we had a bus pass and he started isolating and not going to the places like the clubs that he usually enjoyed going to. And when I asked him why, he wouldn't say nothing until, you know, eventually he shared with us that he felt scared because he'd been bullied verbally on the buses by kids at school. You know, my mum told me that she'd been along for the journey and she sat in an opposite seat and she witnessed it. So, you know, it was quite daunting for him to do that stuff alone. So, yeah, we like to highlight that and let people know that, you know, it doesn't matter what disability, age, race, religion, lack of religion. You know, it hurts. You know, that old saying, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. You know, that's not true. So, yeah, so it's nice to get out and empower Joe and let him choose what he wants to do and involve him. And I don't treat him like he's anything special or he's anything different. We have arguments, don't we, Joe? You know, we just have arguments. He can hold his own against anyone. He just, you know, you might see, oh, like, we're having a go on when we're out and we're having a laugh and that, but the reality is, you know, he's just like anyone else. When he's having a bad day, he'll let you know. You know, we try and make the best out of a bad moment. So, yeah, we enjoy doing what we're doing, don't we?
Yeah.
And Joe just enjoys just doing something. It's strange. He just enjoys doing something for the community without anything in it for him. He just loves it all, don't you?
Yeah.
No, I get it. And just going back to, you know, what you referenced at the top of the our chat there, you know, and the thing with the bus and all that, and it's not, and you can say this, as you said, about race, colour, sexuality, whatever, just like something that's kind of developed over the last couple of years, this lack of empathy and almost understanding. You know, yeah. People get closed in like this, their own self-centred bubble. Not intentionally, by the way, because it's easy to... You know, to fall out when it's just more, you know, trying to raise that awareness. Going back to, you know, doing things for others, and we're going to mention it in a minute, the fundraiser, which we'll detail in a minute. You've been in training this morning, Joe.
Tell them what you've done this morning.
I went up a mountain.
it looked like a mountain. It was a big hill. But we ran up you ran up it, didn't you?
Yeah.
You've done a few laps of the sand dunes, a very steep hill.
Yeah.
You know, he dug deep and he found the strength and the courage to get to the top without me having to help him up or him backing out of it, didn't you?
Anybody can do it, I can.
Yeah, there you go.
Did you chase any squirrels, mate?
Did you chase any squirrels?
Couldn't see any.
Didn't see any. We didn't.
That'll be me, mate, with his air gun, that. Anyway, so... To detail the run up the hill and the walking and the fitness, and this all because you're planning on walking up the Welsh Hills, is that right, to raise money for all the hay?
Yeah, we're going to go up Mulvammer first. We're going to get him. I know Joey before, he's 17 stone. He's not aware of like what kind of food he needs to eat when he's with my mum, so he just eats anything. He's a non-refuser of food, to be fair. So we're trying to give him a balanced diet. We're getting him out and about. Allowing him to put maximum effort into his training without him suffering, which is important, isn't it?
Yeah.
We speak to him about how you're feeling. Is you're okay? He'll tell you if he's not. So it's good that he's making that decision on looking to have a healthy lifestyle at the same time.
Joe, can I ask you, mate, you just thought that. It's kind of everything, these videos that you do that are brilliant and, you know, this challenge that you've took on. Are you excited by it? Are you enjoying it, the challenge?
Yeah, that's what I want to do. I like it.
Why do you want to climb up the Welsh Mountains, Snows and Moh Vamer.
There is money per holiday. Eh?
Why? What's the reason? Tell us.
Because the kids haven't got no where to live and the parents stay with them and all the hay. That's why I'm doing it for, to raise money for them.
In his own little mind, he knows why he's doing it. But he wears it up a little bit.
Oh, no, listen, no, 100%. Listen, I know exactly. It's someone whose parents relied on all day when I was a child. Yeah. I know exactly how important that fundraising is. I think it's absolutely fantastic. And I'm sure, I mean, we'll give this a push now, but we'll constantly keep it, you know, keep an eye on the account and push it as much as we can. I want to see that Rocky montage, though, before you get into it.
We got it, didn't we, today, Joe? Yeah. I'll send you that later, Andy. What happened? We've got it. We've got the Rocky montage. Yeah. I'm gonna clip that up together. To be fair, should we do that for you?
Yeah.
Who's your favourite boxer?
Rocky.
There you go.
And the Tiger.
It's right. Hey, what a score, Rocky! You know what, Rocky? Going through that actually. What's your favourite Rocky? Do you remember, Joe? Is it four?
Four, yeah.
That's a soundtrack. That one as well.
I worked with Stallone. I was a stunt standing on Rambo in 2000. Yeah, I was Sylvester Stallone stunt standing on Rambo 4 in 2005, 2006. Well, 2007
yeah.
It was. Yeah,
that's
it's random show, but when you know, it's true, yeah.
Well, listen, no word of a lie, and it's not out till next week, but I interviewed Eunice from Gladiators last week.
Oh, yeah.
It was obviously the stunt double for Angelina Jolie. So the timeline, this is a little bit mad considering I had no idea about your background with this, which is a bit crackers, isn't it?
Yeah, my background, anyway. I don't know. Yeah, well, see, I wrote a book, Andy, that became an international bestseller, didn't I? And that they released in the cinemas as a major motion picture. So I'm not sure if you're aware of that, but...
I'd seen you've written a book and it's in the title, but I didn't know how big it had gone, mate. No, so I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it's not the greatest kind of like. It's not the best. It's a story of austerity and hardship and, you know, trials and tribulations. And I think most of what I went through was kind of like the consequences that I've created myself over the years. So I feel like I've neglected my brother Joe over the years due to my history of just self centeredness really. And I thought it was about time that, you know, I gave him a piece of myself, you know, give him a bit of a soul back and started, you know, being a brother.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about the book? Because I've just pulled it up on a tab I had there, and it does ring a bell now, and it kind of gives an interesting, well, not an interesting context, because everyone, yeah, you know, it's dead easy to say all stories about redemption, but yeah, just kind of like where that's come from for you.
Well, for me, it was, you know, I was just in the grip of addiction for many years, you know, in and out of institutions. I didn't know there was a way out. I found myself here, travelling to Thailand on a 3-month backpacking holiday, which turned into 5 years. I spent a lot of time in Bangkok, Hilton. Well, you know, the notorious Bangkok Hilton was quite barbaric, to be honest.
Intimidating.
And I writ a journal whilst I was away, you know, sort of like a daily reflections about what was going on, and, you know, it eventually turned into a book that was released.
Disappear Before Dawn, isn't it?
Yeah. And that starred an actor out of Peaky Blinders and the Gangs of London called Joe Cole. Yeah. And we became good friends. Spent a lot of time with each other. I was on set with him in the Philippines. Enjoyed that part of my life, really. It was released in 2018, I think it was around July 2018. It was in Cannes Film Festival. So it's done really well, in a sense, but I didn't want that to be a part of, like, my journey with Joe. Are you with me?
Yeah, so no, I get like, it, no, 100%.
So, yeah, it was... Yeah, so I've written a book, a second one now, and I get published in May this year. May this year, it's finished. And then the publisher, I'm going to write one on our Joey. It's called My Brother Joe, it's going to be called.
Oh, superb. I'll keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, so come. It's, yeah.
you find though? Story. I mean, where you are? No, but where you are now? Because I always find it interesting to set the context, but context. But where you are now, and it's kind of like, and tell me I'm wrong, but is it kind of humbling when you see how brave Joe is sometimes, and what he has to go through day to day on occasion, considering, you know, how easy it is to feel sorry for yourself sometimes.
Yeah, I got to a point where I learned enough awareness and understanding, and I could empathise with him. You know what I mean? And I could put myself in his shoes and think, if that's the way I'm living, you know, I don't think I'd be enjoying myself. You know, having to depend, but he's just so innocent. He doesn't know any better, in a sense. You with me? The little things, the simple things, you know, and all he wants. But he's quite obsessive. And yeah, I mean, he wouldn't admit that, but he is. If you told him something, that you were going to do something with him, like next week, he'd be relentless with it. He wouldn't let go. You know what I mean? He'd remind you every 5 minutes, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Why? Why did you do that? Why did you torment me? That's why I saw you avoid telling him anything.
Hey, maybe
I just turn up on the day and go, we're doing this.
Maybe that's what you need. Listen, we'll detail the fundraiser in a second. Just your Twitter account, dead quick, for those who don't know. It's at Billy Moore, APBD. It's correct, isn't it?
Yep, that's it.
And you look at all the videos there. And you do, I mean, they're coming out at a rate now. They're all brilliant. And the fundraiser is on GoFundMe. Now, I would read the link out, but I don't think I can bend my tongue around it. So what we're going to do, we're going to put the link in the body of the show. So if people want to donate or get interested and need up on it, they can do so. We just click through there. Joe, before we go, I need to ask you, because I see you wearing an Everton shirt there, which is all right, you know, but we are where we are. Who's your favourite player?
I can't remember so many of them.
Joey doesn't know any Everton player's name apart from Big Duncan.
Right.
He's a big fan of them, and he'll watch them, but he won't know who's playing, which I like anyway. But I think one of the guys that got in touch with him and sent him a talk was Yannick Balassi. He sent me a message, and he loved Joe's story, and he asked could he send a match worn top signed to Joseph, didn't he?
Yeah.
And you got it, and you've got it on your wall now, haven't you?
Yeah.
So there's your favourite player now, Yannick Balassi.
Balassi.
So you couldn't pronounce any name either way, to be fair.
No, that's a superb. Don't go to Balassi as well, and shows you as well. People have this impression of footballers, but you know, a lot of them are just young lads with their own lives to go on. Anyway, we'll cut this through now. Enough for your time, Joe, Billy. Thanks very much for your time, and once again, fundraiser on GoFundMe. It's in the body. Billy, do you want your Twitter account again, please?
It's Billy Moore, APBD.
And you get all your videos and all that there. Guys, honestly, thank you so much for joining me. It's been so lovely to speak to you both. So if you listen to this, get involved. Get involved in the fundraising. We're pushing through the links. I've been Andy Heaton. This has been Joe and Billy Moore. Back to the studio.
And we are back on our Zoom call with Robbie O'Neill, with Damien Cavanagh, and with Cathy Long to talk about the FA Cup, and we'll talk about it best we can. As of yet, this game is still on, so we'll assume that it's on but in a bit of trouble. And there's a bit of a decision to make on the FA Cup this season, as in every season. Anyway, I'll start with you, Cathy. Whether they play this weekend or whether they play in the future, you know, it's still a case of, well, who do we play, who don't we play, how seriously should we take it, how seriously should we take this game, you know, looking ahead. You know, there's a lot of things to consider. It's not just the fact that it's a one-off game. It's okay, but when's this sixth round, and do we want a game then? And I think a few Liverpool fans were a bit disappointed to go out the League Cup, for example, until they saw when the quarterfinals and semi-finals were, and suddenly sort of weren't too bothered. And, you know, it is a lot to consider in any season, really, but especially in this one, where it's all so condensed.
Yeah, no, I mean, my heart always says, like, absolutely go for the FA Cup, you know. I think most people's hearts do, don't they? You think, you know, why would you not? You know, you don't know what sort of a run you're going to get. You could get really easy opposition if you can get through the third round. You know, you could sail to the final. And who knows what else is going to happen? Like, in this weirdest of weird seasons, I think it's so hard to predict. My head, of course, worries about injuries, worries about who we might play. I think there'd be a delicious irony if we ended up playing Villa's youth team after last season, but as a mate of mine said, we don't want to end up feeling like Everton did this time last year, you know, losing to our youth team.
Well, exactly, yeah.
You know, so maybe we should be careful what we wish for, but, I mean, let's see if the game's on. But, you know, the thing is, we have got to keep players playing. We haven't had to, we, you know, we played on Monday night. It's not as if we were in the, you know, the cup games midweek, as you were saying. So, you know, maybe it's a game that we do need, and we should be, you know, keeping players fit by playing them. But I am going to be just panicking every time we play now in case a centre half gets injured, you know.
It's funny, isn't it, David? Because it is that balance between rhythm and rest, and he's big on both. Jürgen, he talks about both. He talks about the fact that we can't slog these lads. We can't talk about the fact that we can't, you know, just expect them to just keep going and going. But also, he does talk about rhythm and getting rhythm into the legs. And it's a balancing act that all managers have got, isn't it? Really, between how many times do you ask them to go again? And obviously, the more they're playing, the sharper they are, as well as maybe a little bit of tiredness in the legs.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think it, ironically, this usually the FA Cup third round is very inconveniently timed. It's straight after all the Crimbo games and the New Year's games, possibly before a League Cup semi-final. And this time, it's like with a week either side, near enough. So it's like unusual then that we might not be playing on a game which could be perfectly timed for the club, how they'd look at it. I think you're going to quite happily just play one game a week or one game every 5 days or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It is a tough one. I think, and I do lament how the fact that the FA Cup isn't as important as it might be, and I think the people who run the organisation and the competition haven't been as imaginative as they could have been. I think there's a great magic to it. It is the oldest cup competition in the world. There is so much history behind it. It'd be great to be there. Fans back in the stage in May, you know, there's a glorious day and adding something to football history. But it's not like that anymore. We've got more important priorities, the league. And the Champions League have become, you know, more important to us. And given that, I think Liverpool should just approach it in a way that suits us round by round. And I think that's what we have been doing. And round by round, at this point, it's say, well, listen, there is no chance we're taking any risks with anyone who might be able to be playing centre-back any time in the near future. But there's the likes of Oxlade, Thiago, who need games in the legs. You know, you've got Minamino, you've got Shaqiri. You've also got players where you can say, well, OK, I do want to keep them on the simmer. You could play half a game for, you know, for example, Salah and Mane and stuff like that, so they've still got the hand in and still getting a game. So I think basically if the game's on, Liverpool should approach it in that manner where they say, well, this is a nice luxury here to give a sharpener to some players who need it, give a rest for some people who need it. You know, you've got players like been playing pretty much every game, and it might do them good, you know, their own little mini break, and that'll suit us. And if we look at it from that point of view, on the other side of things, as Cathy's alluded to there, you don't know what side Villa are going to put out. So Liverpool could put a bit of a mismatch out there just to suit. What I think what they should do is Liverpool should play a team that the sports scientists would like Liverpool to play and sort of piece together it from there, and then sort of say, well, if we go through and, you know, by the time you get to the quarters, there's going to be fixture congestion. We say, well, we'll worry about it then. That's first world problems, and we'll prioritise our games then. But here's a chance with a break in between to keep some lads sharp and to build some lads up and to take some lads out of the firing line. And so this could be a perfectly timed game, which, given the way the season's ran for us, it'll then be called off.
Well, that's it. I mean, Damien makes a really good point there, Bobby, when he talks about taking it round by round, but even within round, it can change, you know. And me, you and Damien were talking a little bit before while we were waiting for Cathy, because she's very important and we're just bums sat around doing nothing. We were talking about the famous Burnley tie where we lost 1-0 and Jimmy Traore scores the own goal, but Rafa got a lot of stick. And it was different times and stuff like that, and you know, it probably wouldn't even cause much of a thing at all now, but he got a lot of stick for the team he put out. But what's often forgotten is that was a rearranged game, and it got called off, I think, an hour before, and he he'd picked a really strong team. Well, certainly a strong team for the third round. And then by the time it'd been rearranged with all the extra congestion and stuff, he felt like he had to go weaker. And that might be a similar one for Jürgen in this. He might be thinking, well, you know, Friday night, no game, and then again till a week, Man United, get some rhythm. We talked about, you know, the team he might have picked Friday might be very different to what he goes for in the same round. He's the same opposition whenever the hell this game gets played.
It's totally. And I suppose as well, you know, looking to history, if Rafa hadn't played a weakened side that night and we'd have stayed in the FA Cup that season, there may not have been an Istanbul.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it's where does Providence come into this? And at what point is there a point where Jürgen is just saying, okay, it's a trophy and it's an opportunity for us to get our young lads out there and to be playing? But, you know, I think it just depends on where his attitude lies. I think the last three games, though, may have altered that. As has been pointed out, you know, rhythm's a big thing with him. And I do kind of... There are players in that team that I do think, particularly before United, I don't think the last memory that you want in their heads is that Southampton game. The last memory you want in their heads isn't Ralf Hasenhüttl dropping through his knees. Do you know what I mean? I think you want to get, like, for instance, I'd give Salah somewhere between 30 minutes and an hour against Villa, definitely, because he just hasn't looked at him the last three games. And I know sometimes Mo can be, he can float out of a game and pop up with a couple of goals out of nowhere. But it just, since that interview that he gave, things, I know he scored two against Palace, but I don't know, something doesn't seem quite right with Mo for me. And I think you've got to play him into confidence. So I think you'll probably see a mix. I don't think it'll be a weakened side. I think you'll probably see, I think you will see relative depth in this team, and I don't think that'll necessarily be with an eye on the FA Cup. I think it'll be with an eye on getting these players ready for Manchester United.
Whether this game gets called off or not, Kat, the games are going to get called off. There's already one off in the weekend. I think it's the Shrewsbury Southampton one, is it? Certainly Shrewsbury someone. It's been called off anyway. The Liverpool one's looking ropey, to say the least, and it's going to cause problems, isn't it, in terms of fixture congestion, in terms of when do you play these games. If the Liverpool game is off, then you don't necessarily know where they've got space to do it before the fourth round, so it might have to be that round, and then you're sort of just kicking problems down the line, really. It's going to be hard, isn't it, to sort of, you know, to finish the season, to get these games played, you know, with the fact that you always feel like you're chasing your tail, and then, you know, who knows how many of these games will get lost, you know, the worse this gets.
I think it's one of the things that just adds to the whole unpredictability of it all, you know? Like, and it's weird, isn't it? Like, it should make it more exciting in some kind of way, but it doesn't for me. It just makes the whole thing more unsettling, you know, just not knowing what's going to happen next. But, I mean, I know when I work there, like, what a nightmare it could be for the scheduling. You know, people would always say, can't you just put this game in here or whatever? But then it gets so complicated with possibilities of, like, replay dates and dates by which games have to be played and all the rest of it. So they'd be struggling there on a normal season, you know. I remember, was it 2001 when we ended up playing like four games in the last week of the season because we got to all of the finals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was just the maddest of seasons. In fact, I remember seeing the Liverpool staff just looking like white as sheets by the end of it.
Yeah.
Because they were just exhausted, you know, because just we'd got to every final, they'd had to sell that many tickets and all the rest of it. They were all exhausted. So I can't imagine what it's going to be like now. You know, I mean, may well see clubs, you know, that have got to play like youngsters, that have got to bring all sorts of players in, you know, and I can see it comes back to the subs thing, but I can see why they were saying, well, you know, the argument for playing more subs.
Yeah.
Like, because how, you know, I don't know how a club's going to get to the end of the season when they've already got these games. Maybe it would have to be extended, but with the Euros, if assuming the Euros take place.
Yeah, well,
then I don't know where games can go, really, you know. So you might end up with the situation we were in last year with the Villa game, having you know, one squad playing on one side of the world and one here. Maybe you'll end up with really different squads for different games.
Mm. No, there's a lot to consider. We'll see. We'll see if it kind of goes ahead, and we'll see if Liverpool can have a stab at the FA Cup this season. As Damien alluded to before, I'd really like them to. I'm going to ask you your favourite third round memory before we go. So have a little bit of a think. Third round FA Cup memory. Has anyone got any? Is anyone looking at me? Is anyone sure?
I'll say what I'll go then. I'll go on. Coming with the weather at the moment. Obviously, there's snow all around and Merseyrail's getting called off tomorrow and everything. So that's taken me back to a brilliant FA Cup year for Liverpool 1986, and we played Norwich at home in the third round and banged them 5-0. Norwich were flying high at the top of the second division at the time. It was the orange ball, it was the sludge and the slush all the way up the cop steps and that. And I remember Steve McMahon scoring a goal and then sliding in on his bum towards the cop with his fingers in the air. And I just, it reminds me of great times. And that was when the FA Cup really was the FA Cup. So that one goes down as a classic for me.
I felt like I was there with you there, David. So poetically described the sludge under my feet. Yeah. I was there with you. Cathy, have you got one to mind?
Well, any game that whenever we've played Everton in the third round comes to mind, actually. And it feels like it happens a lot. I think it's because it's happened a few times in the last few seasons. And, you know, maybe it's because it's just so fresh in my mind. But I do remember us saying after last year, like, that was such a victory because we were so worried with the team that we had. You know, we were so worried about playing these youngsters, everyone in the pub beforehand. It felt like we'd gone back a few years when everyone had been groaning when the team was out, you know, and nobody was giving us a prayer. And it was just fantastic to win that game.
Is she robbed yours, Robbie? Have you got another one?
No, man. I mean, that's up there. Like, don't get me wrong, but Luton, the 5-3.
Oh, wow.
Luton, the 5-3.
Was that the Xabi Alonso one?
Yeah, that was a bust out. That was a great day out. Because we went on to win it that year as well. Yeah. You know, I went to a few FA Cup games that season. But that was a good day out. It was just after Christmas. I had a few quid in my pocket and, you know, we had a good day. So it was, I'll never forget that. That was a great game.
I'll tell you a story about that day. I was in Dublin that day. We went to Ryanair. We're doing these flights for a penny. No taxes, so we flew out in the morning and back in the night, and so we were on like the 7 a.m. or something, how to speak, for a penny. Then it was meant to be about 9 o'clock back, I think. And so we have to go to the airport and we'll watch the first half and then we'll get on the plane. Anyway, the flight got delayed and you should have heard this big cheer from us. Oh, 12 lads who were going to, who've been on the ale all day in Dublin, and then we're going to get to watch the full match before, I'd say, rolling on this plane. And you know what I mean? They probably shouldn't have let us on, to be honest with you. But I think at that stage, they just want to get you out the country and in someone else's. Absolutely. I'll give a shout out to Mansfield just because it was a funny day, and Daniel Sturridge scored his first goal for Liverpool, and it was quite a new ground to tick off as well. But there we are. Hopefully we've got some third round memories this season, we shall see. But in the meantime, thanks a lot to Robbie, and thanks a lot to Damien, and thanks to Cathy. One thing I'll just mention before I go, do have a look on our social media. Nivea, who've been doing these wonderful gestures for people. I'm sure you'll have seen the most recent one with Tim Owen Lee from the Flory. They're looking for more. They're looking for more of the same. We've been down to speak to Tim Owen and Lee about it on the weekend a couple of weeks ago. You might have heard, but I'm sure you've seen the fantastic video of Lee kicking goals in at the Kop End and Sadio Mane watching on via Zoom and enjoying it. And as I say, we're doing much more. So you can nominate a community hero if you just go to Nivea Men. It's on our social media as well, but if you go to the Nivea Men social and just have a little bit of a look. And if there's someone within your community who you think deserves shouting about, but also it deserves a little bit of a fuss made of them, and Nivea you want to hear. So go to our social or Nivea Men or just nivea.co.uk and you'll see a bit of a link to all that. And yeah, nominate your own, and who knows, it might be your uncle or auntie kicking balls in the goal of the Kop End. They'll probably do something different. They're very creative people. Anyway, thanks very much. Up the Reds if they play this weekend. A nice one. Sports Social Podcast Network.